Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back, Richard. We're going to do a movie review today, and it's different this time because we're not recording it live. We're not doing the live YouTube event because of all kinds of changes to our schedule and all kinds of things that we had to shift around.
Irma continues to dictate our schedules.
Yes, during the time slot that we were going to do the live video YouTube event for A Monster Calls, we had to or wanted to or needed to or are excited that we had the opportunity to interview someone that that's going to be posted later on this week. So we're recording this movie review on our own. We don't have feedback from listeners, so it'll be a little bit different, but that's okay.
So we missed the live audience.
That's right.
Right.
We're okay with different.
But hopefully people will tune in and give us their comments on this wonderful story.
That's right. So the movie that we're going to talk about today is A Monster Calls. Mm-hmm. Now, two things to disclose. First, we chose this movie without either of us ever having seen it.
Right.
So, there you go. That's the big disclosure.
That's right, because I thought you had seen it. You know, and I said, well, when did you... And he said, I've never watched it before. And I said, well, I wondered how it was chosen. Mm-hmm. How was it chosen?
My wife had seen it.
Oh, that's right.
She said it was really good. Right. And so then I did some reading about it, and it was... I was like, wow, that's a really interesting story. And so... so that's why I proposed it, and then we both watched the trailer, and we were like, okay, let's do it.
Yeah, I forgot that she had seen it.
Right? Yeah.
Good recommendation.
Yeah. It was. And so this movie is a... It's a... I am surprised at, because it's very well done. It's the CGI is really good. The story is fantastic. We'll get to the acting in a few minutes, but it was fantastic. It came out in December of 2016, and I had never heard it. I had never heard of it.
I had never heard of this movie. December 26th. That's movie time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all go to movies over Christmas. I assume it was in theaters. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it even came out like right around Christmas time, December 23rd or something.
And
like
it
that.
Should have been one of those things that when you were saying it's a movie, and I thought it's a blockbuster.
Yeah.
It should have been somebody should have won an award.
Yeah.
Or several awards for this movie.
Now there were some awards won, but you know, I think what really disappoints me is that I have IMDb pulled up right here because I wanted
you to have what?
IMDb. It's okay. Don't worry.
IMDb.
Internet Movie Database. Now,
no.
Wait a minute. Oh gosh.
IMDb.
Uh huh. Internet, Movie, DB database. Internet Movie Database.
And it is.
It's a website that has everything about almost every movie, ever made and to be created.
How long has that been out, IMDb?
A long time. It's okay. It's all right. But one of the important things that's on here is it has the box office totals. The budget for this film was estimated to be $43 million. Now, so I think much of that is the CGI,
effects.
Special effects.
CGI?
But also computer-generated images. It's okay. And of course, because there's a few big stars in it. But look at the gross.
That's unbelievable. The opening weekend.
It only made $30,000 the opening weekend.
Something's
December
wrong.
December 23rd.
Something is wrong here.
So it's what's sad to me about it is that, you know, I don't know what the current gross is. The gross as of, you know, the end of January was 3 million something. But it doesn't show anything more. It did much better worldwide. So worldwide, it's probably come close to, it has certainly made its money back. But what I'm getting to is, here in the United States at least, it has not gained any notoriety. It has not, you know, been publicized. Again, I don't even remember how my wife came across it, but we came across this film, and we both had it on our list to watch, and she watched it before I had a chance to.
I think I would refer to this as a pearl.
Yeah.
It's in an ugly container.
Uh-huh.
But there is an absolute gem inside.
Right, right.
I think everybody should see this at least once.
Yeah. There's moments that are a little intense, especially when the monster first comes, but it's fantastic. We'll get to that in just a minute. It's directed by J.A. Bayona, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's written by Patrick Ness. And Patrick Ness wrote the book as well as the screenplay, so this is his baby, you know. But there's four actors.
Four main characters. It really revolves around these four people.
Right. The first character is Connor, C-O-N-O-R, which is very close to how we spell my Connor's
That's
name.
That's probably why your wife watched it.
Spelled his name K-O-N-O-R.
Right.
So, and that's played by Lewis McDougall. That kid...
Yeah.
He acted his socks off. He did such a great job. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. His grandmother was played by Sigourney Weaver, who we all know
is fantastic. Right.
His mother was Felicity Jones.
Right. And
again, mm-hmm. fantastic actress. And the monster was voiced by Liam Neeson, who just has a monstrous voice. He does so well. That's Scottish...
Mm-hmm.
Hint in his deep. In his accent mm-hmm. with the deep gravelly. It was fantastic. But all of these characters and actors came together, and you know, I mean, if I was a film critic, like you said, I would say, you know, this is something that everybody needs to see.
Mm-hmm.
It's rated PG-13. I don't even think that there was a curse word in it. Not that I can remember.
No.
There wasn't any The violence was, you know, two kids fighting, but nothing.
But it wasn't graphic, right?
Nothing mm-hmm. graphic.
I mean, you knew it was a struggle.
Right.
knew it was difficult, but it wasn't graphic.
The most graphic thing was the mother's illness, and we learned this right away, early in the film. And so, I guess, you know, we probably should start doing this at the beginning of times when we are reviewing movies. There's going to be spoilers here. We're going to talk about the film in some specificity. So if you haven't seen it yet, you might want to pause and come back to this after you've watched it. But
mm-hmm.
But we are going to talk about some things pretty specifically.
Right.
But even if you watch the trailer or read the synopsis, we know very early on that he lives alone with his mother, and right. his mother's sick from cancer.
Yeah, one of the first things you realize is that he's alone in the morning. Mm-hmm. He's getting ready for school or something. Right. So you know, and he's doing it by himself. So
he's doing his laundry.
Right. So you say, why is this kid? And you know he's about 11 or 12 or 13 or something. Mm-hmm. He's in that trend. He's a tweener.
He's
call
a
tweener.
Small.
Yeah, 12. Small kid, mm-hmm. diminutive. And so he's doing all the stuff. So, okay, where are the adults?
Mm-hmm. You know?
Then he opens a cabinet mm-hmm. and there's a medicine bottle in there.
Yeah.
And if you look it up, if you don't know what the medicine is, you look it up and you know right away why there are no adults around.
Right.
Or at least why his mother... Somebody's not around for some
right.
reason.
Yeah. So his mother is fighting cancer, and she's going through various forms of treatment, chemotherapy and different
right.
things throughout the film. But yeah, he is taking care of himself. So he gets himself up in the morning, he does his laundry, he fixes his breakfast, and he gets to school and, you know, doing...
A little disheveled. You know, his tie isn't...
Yeah.
Where it should be, and his jacket's got... He's kind of...
he doesn't button his top button.
Which is a good thing. But he's kind of... I can't think of the word. Frumpy. Kind of sloppy. You know, his pants are too long, and his shoes are dirt. You know, he's disheveled. He's a little disheveled. He looks... Throughout the entire movie, he's mm-hmm. a little disheveled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can tell he feels alone. He feels... invisible, and that's going to be something
he's alone.
We speak to in more detail later.
And the other thing that comes out very early is there's something about him drawing.
Yes,
and that becomes another major theme besides being
artist.
Alone. You see this. It's a wonderful thing that they did with the film because they show the pencil going across the paper mm-hmm. at very close range, and you see him. Obviously, he's drawing something. You don't know what it is yet. But he's drawing something.
Yeah.
So his drawing becomes a theme in the movie.
Right.
Remains a theme.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as we go through the film, instead of going through it really sequentially, there are some really specific right. highlights that we want to pull out and talk about. But the movie does start out with Connor asking the question. You just sort of hear the voiceover. You know, how does the story begin? Hmm. And you hear that...
You hear a voice. The
unmistakably Liam Neeson voice. He says, it begins like so many stories, with a boy too old to be a kid, too young to be a man, and a nightmare.
Right.
And this is just as Connor's waking up from a nightmare.
Right. And he was having... he has this recurring mm-hmm. nightmare, obviously losing his mother. And you're right. And so immediately you know that we're talking about somebody who's just beginning the transition.
Right.
That adolescent transition. So mm-hmm. this is a boy entering adolescence and transitioning to adulthood.
Right.
And the struggles that one has at that age.
And so, again, the so well written to pull up mm-hmm. the details that this is the life of a 12-year-old. Right. You know, that in between, you know, too old to be a kid. He's not a kid anymore, mm-hmm. but he's not a man. So he's too old to sort of get away with the childish behaviors, but too young still to really know how to behave like an adult.
He doesn't know what to do with the emotions he's feeling.
Yeah.
They're big emotions because yeah. our emotions are big in those years. One of the magical things about this movie is how the adult, whoever captured the struggles that we go through during these years, did a really good job. Because we yeah. forget, and I mentioned this in our book one time, as adults, we know how everything turns out. So right. we look back and say, hey, it's going to be okay. You know, yeah. it's going to be all right. Everything works out okay. But man, when you're looking in the other direction, yeah. you're saying, I don't know how this is turning. I don't know where this is going. Yeah. You know, you feel like you're on a train with no brakes headed downhill.
Yeah.
This kid's looking into his future, not knowing what in the world is going to yeah. happen or yeah. when it's going to happen or how it's going to work out. So it's really a scary time.
Yeah.
So you understand the nightmares mm-hmm. because he's scared to death.
Yeah.
He doesn't know how it's going to work out.
Absolutely. And we'll kind of get to some of the scary stuff in just a little bit. And scary stuff meaning scary about decisions that you have to make and, you know, mm-hmm. what's going to happen. So we know that he's in this in-between stage. And I think that part of that, and what the monster is there to help him, right? The monster is there to help him.
You know early on that the monster is not an adversary.
Right. Now, the arrival of the monster is a little intense.
Right.
And again, it's PG-13, so, you know.
Nobody gets hurt.
7 or 8-year-olds probably shouldn't be watching it necessarily, but...
True.
But it's a little intense, and there's times when the monster gets angry and he turns red mm-hmm. and fiery a little bit, but you never get the sense that he's in danger, and I think, you know, that's not something that I pulled out on the slides here, but... Connor's a courageous kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he first encounters the monster, he just walks right up to him.
That surprised me.
Yeah.
He did. He walked right up to this thing.
And it's, you know, the monster comes from this huge yew tree. Mm-hmm. And so he's a big wooden with, you know, limbs coming off in different directions, looking like spikes and stuff.
He emerges from the tree,
right,
and brings part of the tree with him. So
right.
the front, he's got all these tentacles and mm-hmm. things coming out the back of his yeah. head and his shoulders and things. But you're right. So it would be scary,
right,
to young children. But Connor just walks right up to it.
Yeah,
and it's more out of curiosity. He's also mm-hmm. a curious kid.
Right.
You know?
When he gets angry with it.
Right. Yeah. And he fights back.
Yeah.
No, which is good. But
And so the monster arrives at 12:07.
Yes.
12:07 a.m. And we find out, we'll talk later, why right. that time is important. But so 12:07. And the monster is there to help Connor through this process, and he says, you know, I'm going to tell you 3 stories,
mm-hmm.
and then at the end, there'll be a 4th story, but that will be the story that you tell.
Right.
And so Connor's a little bit resistant, but he tells these stories, and they're 3 sort of very complex, abstract stories. The first story is about a prince, mm-hmm. or a king.
The king.
Who has a beloved kingdom, and you know, his wife passes, and he takes a new queen, and his son is, and they talk about all the things that he had to sacrifice for his kingdom to be happy and healthy, and his sons actually had to go fight, right, and died, and so he was raising his grandson as a mm-hmm. as the heir. He takes this new wife, and she is a witch, is what we find out.
Right.
And the story goes on, and it ends up to where all kinds of it's just fascinating. I don't want to tell the whole story,
right,
'cause I want everybody to listen to it, but it's a very complex story, and it doesn't it ends in unexpected ways, and the monster talks about things. And so Connor says at one point in the movie, he says, "Your stories never make sense to me." And the monster responds with, "Because humans are complicated beasts.
Right.
You believe comforting lies while knowing full well the painful truth that makes those lies necessary. In the end, Connor, it is not important what you think. It is only important what you do."
Mm-hmm.
And then Connor asks, "So what do I do?" And the monster says, "What you did just now. You speak the truth."
Right.
Connor says, "That's all?" And the monster says, "You think that's easy? You were willing to die rather than speak it."
Right.
And I think that this sequence, this portion of the film mm-hmm. is so wonderful. And again, it's well written, because we talk to our kids sometimes about very complex issues, you know, morality, ethics. We talk, you make this decision over this decision. And kids go from being very black and white, yes and mm-hmm. no, right and wrong, to a world that is much more gray, to a world that has many more, you know. One of the stories is the prince, in that story that I was telling, the prince, he was going to take a bride, and the bride ended up dying, being mm-hmm. killed. And everybody blamed the queen, and so they got rid of the queen, and then they thought the queen was this evil person, because they thought that she had killed mm-hmm. the king so that she could take power and all this kind of stuff. And in the end, none of that was true.
Right.
The queen had not killed the king. The queen didn't kill the girl yeah. that the prince wanted. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the prince had killed her, because he knew that that would be a way to turn the people against the queen, to get her out so that he could take over. But in the end, he was a beloved king. The, mm-hmm. That evil queen, the witch queen, she went off somewhere else and lived somewhere else. and everybody seemed to come out okay.
Right.
And so it was really confusing for a child to appreciate how can these things happen at the same time? How can a person make a really bad decision but mm-hmm. be a relatively good person?
Right. Because he asks, where are the good guys? Who's right. the good guy?
Right.
And the monster says,
"It's not always a good guy.
Not always a good guy.
And there's not
humans
always a bad
are
guy.
Complicated. You know, right. we have a little, and this is part of the adolescent transition, mm-hmm. is that you go from there's good and evil mm-hmm. to everybody has a little bit of good and a little bit of evil. And you learn that as a teenager, or right. you should learn that right. as a teenager. When you're a young child, you don't realize yeah. that somebody can be good and bad at right. the same time. That good people can do bad things and bad people can do good things. You learn that as a teenager, and that's the lesson that he right. begins to learn, that Connor begins right. to learn from the monster's stories and actions.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that where this plays out in many people's true life is with divorce.
Right. You know, we see it all the time with children right. of divorce.
Mm-hmm. Because you have the parents who are now opposed to each other.
Right.
And the kid is being told that the mother or father is bad by the other mm-hmm. parent, and then but the kid sort of at the same time says, "Well, that's mom or that's my dad." Mm-hmm. You know, they're good people, and so it's really conflicting for kids, and they really right. have a difficult time appreciating that. And so here, I think it is very developmentally appropriate for Connor to be struggling with that, because he is just at that age where he would be transitioning mm-hmm. to appreciate it.
Yeah, because these children of divorce, the preteens, they don't realize that there are two stories.
Right.
You know, as adults, we realize that right. mom has a story and dad has a story, and they each have a true story. Children don't operate that way.
Right.
Theory of mind tells us that a child will look for the truth.
Right.
And so they keep struggling with their parents, thinking, well, if you know, Dad, somebody has to be lying.
Right.
I'm getting two stories. Mm-hmm. So somebody has to be lying. And so they spend a lot of time and energy trying to figure out who's lying.
Right.
When nobody's lying. They're each telling their truth.
Right.
But when you're 8 years old, you can't grapple with that incongruity. And so kids struggle in those years. And parents are and that's why we advise parents, don't tell your story because they don't understand that there are two stories here. They just can't grapple with that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Connor's just beginning to grapple with it. He's really, and he gets angry because he said, wait a minute, I want the truth. I want to know, I want to plant my flag somewhere.
Right.
And the monster's saying, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw this in another film, but in a person's report from war. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about how, you know, we grow up thinking that we go to war against another group of people and they are the bad guy.
We demonize
and
them.
So they have to be bad, and that's how we have to focus on them so that we can go to, you know, battle against them. And there was a soldier who came back, or infantryman, I can't remember what his exact role, but he came back and he talked about, you know, going across the battlefield. And so this was World War II, I think. And he went into a foxhole, mm-hmm. and there was a soldier from the other side there, holding a Bible, mm-hmm. praying, and it really, he said that he talked about how that really shook him, mm-hmm. because he was holding the same Bible that he held before he, mm-hmm. you know, went into battle that day. He was praying a very similar prayer, just in a different language, mm-hmm. than what he would pray, and he that really affected him to the point where he really had a difficult time continuing to fight. Mm-hmm. And you know, certainly that person is much older than Connor, but that incongruity continues to be the case. We try to think that, okay, it's black and white, it's good and bad. In reality, life is much more complex than that.
Right.
Humans are complicated beasts, mm-hmm. as the monster says.
Right. The monster's right. They're complicated beasts.
That's right. So, as we go through the film, we see, you know, the monster comes in the evenings or at night around 12:07, mm-hmm. and one time during the day at 12:07. We'll talk about that in just a second. But he's there at 12:07. And tells the story, or kind of shares some information, but the rest of the movie, of course, is Connor's life. Right. And what we see is we see him at school, we see him sitting in the back of the room, not really paying attention, drawing a lot. Mm-hmm. We see him listening to headphones at school.
Right.
We see him walking down the streets by himself. I mean, terrific images of just this 12-year-old boy walking down the road.
Nobody else is around. No cars, no people, no dogs, nothing.
And that's a striking thing throughout this entire movie, is that, you know, there are relatively few actors and actresses in the movie, except mm-hmm. for those individuals. The only place that we see more people is in the classroom.
At school. Right.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the streets are almost always empty.
Right.
And there's not much else going on. So you get this real feeling of Connor's loneliness. Mm-hmm. And it does turn into, and this is very explicitly said, that he is invisible.
Right.
And so, you know, one of the things that happens during development is during this time, kids feel invisible.
Right.
During this stage, we have this the adolescent fable, and we have these different things that kids are going through, or teenagers, tweens are going through, as they're trying to figure out where they fit in, mm-hmm. and they, you know, they feel like they're the only ones that are going through this. They feel like nobody else understands. They have this. They build this fable that they are isolated. That nobody else can understand them. Except for maybe a friend, otherwise nobody else can understand them, and they're all alone. Now Connor didn't have any friends,
right?
We see that very clearly. Nope. And so, a couple of things that really stood out to me was at one point they're getting ready to take a test in school, And Connor is sitting there with his little MP3 player with the headphones on. Like, not even like earbuds, but like no, big headphones.
Big headphones, right.
And the teacher walks by, puts the paper on his desk, and just keeps walking and talks about, you know, you know, there's no cheating, you know, when you finish the test. Like, the teacher didn't even recognize that he's sitting there with headphones on and not really even paying attention or anything.
Right.
It was striking. And earlier...
And he even looks at him. Connor, at one point, looks up at the teacher.
Yeah.
And like...
You're not going to say anything?
Do you see there's somebody sitting in the desk with headphones on?
Exactly.
And no, nobody says anything. And he just said, okay.
Earlier in the film, Connor was sitting back in the back of the room, and the teacher came back and kind of whispered, mm-hmm. Are you doing okay? You know, if you ever want to talk. Right. And Connor's like, I'm fine, you know. So we get that idea that the school knows that he's struggling with these issues. Mm-hmm. But because he's struggling with these issues, they ignore him.
Right.
Completely.
They're afraid to, I think they all look like they're afraid to intrude mm-hmm. into his struggle. Mm-hmm. You know, they mm-hmm. don't know what to do, so they do nothing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which is an error of omission.
Almost as bad mm-hmm. as doing the wrong thing.
As it turns out, you know.
Yeah, so this culminates in... So there's a bully. Mm-hmm. And I don't... I wish I understood... I'm going to have to read the book because I want to fully understand the dynamics of the bully. Because... He picks on him for, you know, not that bullies need a reason to pick on anybody, but there's no reason.
There's two things about this bully. One is you never really know why they're picking on
right.
him. You know,
it's he like just looks back at him and, you know, and then leaves him a note, you know, right. I'll see you as usual after school.
Right. Oh, that was terrifying.
He opens his math book and there's a little note inside.
And the bully is, you remember that story, the Christmas story about the BB gun.
Yeah.
I've forgotten the name of it.
It's called A Christmas Story.
Is that what it's called?
Sorry.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of Christmas stories. But the bully in that is unlikable. You just don't like him because of the way he looks. You don't dislike this bully. He's a good-looking kid.
Yeah.
And you realize he's a bully, and he's not terribly physical. I mean, physical enough, but... Number one, you don't know why he's picking on him. And number two, you don't really dislike the bully.
Well, and you know what was really interesting is there's...
I mean, you hate what he's doing.
The one of the last times that he mm-hmm. That he picks beats him up, he always has these two cronies that are with
right.
him.
And you don't like them.
You don't like them. Because it's like Crabbe and Goyle from Harry Potter. You know, it's like you don't like those guys. But at one point, one of those other two hit him. And he mm-hmm. goes, no. Mm-hmm. You know, O'Malley and I, we have an understanding. I'm the only one that touches him.
Right, right.
And it's like, it's almost sibling-ish.
Right. It's almost like a sibling rivalry.
Yeah.
You know? Like they have some history that we don't know about.
That we don't know about, right. Mm-hmm. So at one point, this culminates in a scene in the cafeteria at mm-hmm. school, right at 12:07 in the afternoon. And the bully comes up to Connor at school, and he confronts him, and he says, I think I've finally figured you out.
And you think, oh, finally we're going to figure this. We're going to finally find out.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was truly thinking that at some point the bully was going to switch and mm-hmm. sort of embrace him and be... But no, that didn't happen.
No.
And he says, you know, from now on, you know, I'm not going to bother you anymore. I'm not going to mm-hmm. mess with you anymore, because from now on you're invisible to me. You aren't even here. And he turns to walk away, and as he's walking away, he makes the error of saying, I hope your mom's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, it struck 12:07.
Right.
The monster comes, and the monster says it's time for the third story. And the third story is about a boy who's gets really mad, an invisible man. Who was tired of being invisible. Mm-hmm. And so Connor and the monster, and we later learn, of course, that it's just Connor, runs after this kid, catches him from behind, and sends him to the hospital.
Right.
It reminded me of the scene from Perks of Being a Wallflower that we talked about last time. Mm-hmm. If you touch my friends again, I'll blind you.
No.
But
That was from...
Perks of Being a Wallflower. Yeah. So
but there was a similar scene in 13 Reasons Why. Finally, you get this rebellion, you know, the get even. But you don't realize, because you don't see the violence.
Right.
Okay, once again, you don't see it. You know...
You see the flashbacks of a few hits, but that's about it.
Right, yeah. But you don't realize what he did until he's sitting in the principal's office and she said, you put him in the hospital.
Yeah.
You know, and you say, oh my gosh. You know,
so this little kid.
This stunning change in him. But yeah, he goes from being bullied, one form of attention, and to you're invisible.
Yeah.
And then you say, which is worse?
Right.
Is it worse to be... Because at least you exist if somebody's picking on you. To say you're invisible puts you in a very different category.
Right.
And I don't know which is worse. You know, sometimes we say, I'd rather that they hate me rather than be indifferent to me.
Right.
You know,
dislike
me, but don't be indifferent.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, as you said, we next find him in the principal's office, and she talks about him, and she talks about how this is an expulsion, a offense that's worthy of expulsion.
Right, that he could be expelled.
But they're not going to do it.
But they don't.
And they send him back to class.
And he asks about the punishment. You're not going to punish me?
She says, what good will that do you?
Right. Which is a recurring theme.
I don't know how to take that.
Well, it's a recurring...
I mean, I take it... Well, yeah, go ahead.
It's a recurring theme throughout the whole movie.
There's another scene where he and the monster are destroying this... in his... We think it's in his dream. Is destroying this... I think it's a
church.
Chapel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Destroying it. And when it comes back to reality, he is destroying a room in his grandmother's house.
With the grandfather clock.
Oh, my.
And the significance is, at one point in the movie, she tells him, that's the only clock that tells accurate time. And she refers to the clock on his computer and says, that's not the right time.
Not your computer, not your phone. That's accurate time.
That's the accurate time. Because it was her mother's clock or something.
And they had been telling the accurate time for hundreds of years.
Right. For our family. And... He
took
on
care
the
of
floor.
That.
The clock was on the... He destroyed the furniture, the picture. He destroyed the whole room.
And when we talk about how good of an actor this kid is, he looked, the expressions on his face, the emotion that he evoked when he was doing that.
He captured it.
Wow. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was really amazing.
The blind rage.
Right.
Came through.
But when he realized that he was really what was really happening, and he looked around the room as Grandma's walking in, the terror,
self-awareness, the awareness of what he had just done.
He doesn't even say it, but you can.
He doesn't need to say anything.
But at that point, Grandma did not say anything. She did not punish. She didn't do anything, and in fact, she didn't talk to him again for a good portion of the remainder of the film. And then now the principal didn't punish him. And it's, that again, this recurring theme of, you know, it doesn't matter.
And his dad didn't punish him. There was another scene where his dad said...
His dad said, well, what good would that do?
They keep it, what good would... All three of them said, what good would that do?
Yeah. And he's looking for that. He's looking for... And we've talked before about how kids want structure. You know, they don't overtly say, I want you to apply structure. I want you to control me. I want you to manage this stuff. But they really do want that. They really do need that.
Right. They need the security of knowing where the boundaries are.
Right.
And if you make the boundaries too big or you don't have any boundaries, it's very unsettling to children, and including adolescents.
Right. Right. Yeah. So,
this punishment thing... As I watched it, I was glad that they didn't punish him. He didn't need... I mean, what would they have done?
Right.
I mean, the kid's already struggling with this enormous issue of his mother dying in front of him. And not knowing what his future is going to be like. So, on the one hand, I appreciated that they weren't punishing him. So they sort of understood the struggle that he was going through, and that all of this was a manifestation of his struggle. On the other hand... I'm sure that people will wonder, well, what should the consequence be? You know, when kids do things like this. And
what I kept hoping, and they didn't, and I think that, and I don't think that that's a flaw of the film. I think it's a, I think it's a reality.
It's a reality, right?
That nobody said, let's talk about how angry you are.
Mm-hmm. No.
Nobody said, you know, let's talk about this because mm-hmm. clearly you're struggling, dude. Let's talk about what's happening.
Yeah.
Nobody did that.
No.
And again, I don't think that that's an omission of the film inadvertently. I think that that's what really happens. You know, we oftentimes deal with kids and tweens and teens mm-hmm. who are struggling with these really deep, intense emotions. Right. And nobody says, let's talk about how you're feeling. Right. Let's talk about what's going on with the fact that your parents divorced when you were young and your dad went off to move to the United States.
That was the first issue he was dealing with that you don't realize until later.
Yeah.
That his dad sort of rejected him.
And
keeps rejecting
him. And dad talks about his sister, stepsister.
Right. Yeah.
Or half-sister. half-sister.
Right.
And you know, dad's like, well, maybe you could come for Christmas. And he's like, just for a visit, you know? And that's like, well, you can't come to LA because...
Yeah, you know, can't live with us.
Yeah. And so there's that rejection and, you know, and his mom's dying and it's like all of these...
You know, we only have one bed, two bedrooms, so you can't come and live with us. And he's thinking...
Yeah. And there's one scene and, you know, attend to this scene where he, you know, dad hugs him or he hugs dad. He's real sad. And midway through the hug, he pushes dad away,
right.
like both arms fully extended. And, you know, again, it's that insecure attachment.
Mm-hmm.
It's the, you know, I want to be close to you, but I can't be close to
you. Right, right.
And so...
And all it takes is that push away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we always say teenagers are pulling us toward them with one hand and pushing us away with the other. And
absolutely. There's some other lines from the movie that... Mm-hmm. Again, I think are really good. You mentioned this earlier. You know, there's not always a good guy,
right.
not always a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that the monster says is many things that are true feel like a cheat.
Right.
And, you know, this was in response to something Connor said. And it is so accurate because we hold sort of, again, like the earlier slide said, you know, we hold onto lies knowing that they're mm-hmm. lies. But because the truth just feels unfair,
right.
And it doesn't stop it from being the truth, and so we have to, you know, when we're working with kids, especially, you know, if there's any professionals, mental health professionals listening or watching, you know, you have to think about that mm-hmm. when you're working with youth and kids that, you know, especially young kids are going to be looking for black and white,
right?
Truth and lie. That's what they're looking for,
right?
And it's not that clean.
No.
So, one of the parts is Connor says, asks his dad, so, because they were talking about why his parents separated, and dad says, dad was talking about it, and Connor says, so you didn't have happily ever after. He goes, Connor, that's not real life. He goes, most of us just get messily ever after.
But you see Connor struggling with this black or white world, you know, mm-hmm. that the child's, he's finally realizing that the absolutes of childhood
mm-hmm.
are beginning to evaporate. The
right.
sand is beginning to wash away.
Right.
And the world is much more, many things that are true feel like a cheat.
Mm-hmm.
There's not always a good guy. You know, there is no happily ever after.
Right. And the next one, love isn't enough.
Right. Love is not enough.
It's not
right.
enough to carry, it won't carry you through.
Right.
It's this idea that, you know, we hold on to the, I mean, they really are fantasies.
We hold on to these fantasies.
They're parts of fairy tales
right.
that we learn from when we're young.
That's right. We want them to be true. We want to have a good guy and a bad
mm-hmm.
guy. You know, I was watching a thing the other day and they were talking about how popular Westerns were
mm-hmm.
Around, you know, right before and right after World War II.
Yeah.
Right after World War I and World War II. Because we were looking for good guys and bad
right.
guys. We wanted it to be very clear who the good guys were. And so the Western became a very popular story because there was a good guy and a bad guy.
And even if you remember it then, we kept it very clear. Good guys wore white hats. Bad guys wore black hats.
Right.
You could tell.
The first time you looked at a good guy.
Right.
The bad guys needed to shave and they were dirty and
mm-hmm.
smelly. And the good guy was clean and looked terrific.
Yeah.
You know, until Clint Eastwood came along.
I was going to say. And then we started
and
to spin
Star,
that.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The whole Star Wars movies. You know,
yeah.
you say, Darth Vader's really a bad guy.
Yeah.
But there are things about him.
But, you know, I'm glad that you brought up Star Wars. Because, I mean, Han Solo.
Right.
Han Solo, he's a scoundrel.
He's an outlaw.
He's a
bounty hunter and an outlaw.
And he does all these things, but he's a good guy.
But he's a good guy. Brett Butler was that in Gone with the Wind. He ran blockades. Mm-hmm. He was a smuggler. He was a smuggler. Mm-hmm. Right.
So I didn't know that's what you were looking for.
I couldn't remember the word. But Han Solo was a smuggler.
Yeah.
I mean, he was kind of an outlaw, you know, on the edges of the
everybody was
system.
Looking for him.
Right. Jabba the Hutt wanted him because there was a bounty on his head.
Yeah.
So, you get into these more complicated... Clint Eastwood certainly is a complicated mm-hmm. good guy.
Right.
Because he does a little bit of both.
Yeah. Near the end of the film, there's a scene where Connor's going to talk to his mom. Now, throughout the movie, Connor's mom is feeding him false hope. Would that be fair to say?
Well, she's going through these treatments that she hopes will work. I don't mm-hmm. think she has much confidence that they will.
But she's telling
him. But she's trying to keep that from him.
Right. I
mean, she knows the truth.
Right.
She's holding it back from him.
Right.
Until the very end.
So near the end, she is clearly not doing well.
Right.
And so he visits her at the hospital. Mm-hmm. And she has this great little monologue.
Right.
That I think is really beautiful for a lot of reasons. And this is what she says. I'll read it quickly. She says, it's okay. She calls him Khan.
Right.
She mm-hmm. says, it's okay that you're angry, Khan. It really is. I'm pretty angry too, to tell you the truth. But Connor, you listening? One day, if you look back and you feel bad for being so angry you couldn't even speak to me, you have to know that that was okay. That I knew, because I know everything you need to tell me without you having to say it out loud. Mm-hmm. And if you need to break things, by God, you break them. Break them good and hard, and I'll be right there, Con.
Because she just heard.
She found out about them.
Her mother came mm-hmm. in and said, you know, he's destroyed the sitting room.
Right.
And she was absolving him mm-hmm. of the guilt.
Yeah.
Which was a charitable thing to do.
Right.
At the end of your life.
And I think that it's a very... What I think is so moving about it is that she, as you said, she's absolved... Because he's really mad. And mm-hmm. he's not talking to her during this point. Because she just basically told him that the treatment's not working. Right. After telling him that the treatment was going to work and that it was going to be... Everything mm-hmm. was going to be fine. She's just told him that the treatment's not working.
Right.
And she's sorry. And he kind of stopped. And he was clearly distressed. And so she says this, and I think that so the beautiful thing is first that that she recognizes that, and she says it's okay. She's letting him know that don't look back at this and be upset about it. And I really wish that parents did that more often, not just on our deathbeds or anything like that, but you know, there are times when our kids are really ticked off at us.
Right.
And they are not going to talk. They're not going mm-hmm. to respond the way that we want them to. They're going to be irritable and agitated. And I think that the ability to say, look, I know you're really upset with me, and that's okay. We'll get through this. It'll right. be fine. And then we'll, you know, just know that I love you. Know that I understand how and why perhaps that you're angry, and it's going to be okay. We don't do that enough, but I think... It's important.
Yeah, I mean, again, we go back to this punishment. You know, there have to be consequences.
Right.
There don't always have to be consequences. But if there are, they should teach something.
Right.
Okay, he destroyed everything in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But he was forgiven.
Yeah.
You know, people, we understand why you did what you did. I mean, he didn't destroy something every day.
Mm-hmm.
This was a single incident.
Right.
The rest of the time, he was a pretty decent kid. And so I think that's where we have to draw the distinction, is that this is a one-time event, not a recurring cycle. He's not stealing regularly. He's not cheating regularly. He's not lying regularly. This was a single event. So you forgive, you know, forgiveness is a little bit easier. It doesn't have to be punished. In fact, he was, you know, his mother's dying. She knows she's not going to be around much longer, and she wants to end on a good note.
Yeah.
So she does that.
Yeah. So, as I was saying earlier, the film, as we go through the film, the monster says, I have three stories to tell, and then you're going to tell your story. And Connor's story is his nightmare. And the nightmare is basically the area around where the yew tree is. It is crumbling, falling into this deep, deep pit. Mm-hmm. And he is there trying to save his mom from falling down in the pit. And he wakes just as their hands release. And so that scene is pretty intense because he's living it and he's experiencing it and all that is happening. And so the monster, and how, again, the way that they edited it and everything, you know, he's holding on and he's, you know, the monster is telling him, say it, you know, talk about it, you know, say what the truth is and everything. And it builds and builds a crescendo, and then it's just complete silence. I thought it paused or something. I was like, what happened? Because it was like complete silence.
Right. And you didn't know whether it was over or what's going to happen next.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he had let go, and he says, you know, this is where I wake up. Right. And so the monster, you know, as the movie grows, the monster says, you know, here is the end of the tale. And Connor says, I'm afraid. He says, of course you are afraid. It will be hard. It will be more than hard. Mm-hmm. But you will make it through, Connor and Allie. And Connor asks, you know, you'll stay. And the monster says, I'll be right here. And this is, you know, after that happens, after he works through his story, the nightmare, the culmination of his nightmare is the sad fact that Connor wants it over.
Right.
He wants to hold on to his mom so much, and he wants to hold on to her for her to be there. But at the same time, he wants all of this over.
He wants all this to be over.
And he feels awful that he wants it to be over.
Right.
He is torturing himself.
That's the guilt part. Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the truth that he needed to speak was that he wanted it to be over.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, as Connor's hugging his mom at the end, you know, mom looks at the monster's there. He says, I'll be right here. And so they're back in the hospital by now. And the monster says, I'll be right here. And he's hugging his mom, and his mom looks up and she sees the monster.
And you see recognition in her eyes.
Yeah.
And at that moment, you know that she and the monster have a relationship.
Right.
The same kind of relationship that Connor has with the monster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really beautifully ties them together. Mm-hmm. And then,
you have the monster, Connor, his mother, and his grandmother.
Right.
And all of them are linked at that point.
Right.
So you know that something special between them.
And I'm pretty sure, I didn't have a way to zoom in and really look at it. But if you watch the film, see if you can, this is what I think I saw.
I know what you're going to say.
This is what I think I saw. There are several times in the movie where you see a picture of his mother as a child.
Right.
Sitting on her father's shoulder. In the picture, I think that that's Liam Neeson. I think that Liam Neeson, the voice of the monster, was her father.
Right.
And so he manifests as sort of this guidance and everything that she needs through him.
Because at one point in the movie, early on in the movie, Connor's mother says, I wished you would have known him.
Right.
You know, and she was talking about her father.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do wonder about him. The mother, Sigourney Weaver, is well represented, but where's dad? What happened to him?
Right.
And she says, I wished you would have known him. And then at the end, you see these family pictures.
Yeah.
And one of them is probably, I'll have to go back and look at it.
I think it's him.
I couldn't see it clearly on the one that I was watching.
Yeah.
That would be.
Yeah. But it pulls and ties it all together. And of course, you know, he's hugging his mom, and you get the clear impression as the scene kind of the picture pans over to the clock and it strikes 12:07. 12:07 is when his mother passes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so that's why that time was so important throughout the film.
Right.
Yeah. So, but again, just really beautifully done, because it just ties all the pieces together there at the end, things that you didn't know were as significant as they are.
Yeah.
So what this film does well a lot of things. But one of the
does
things
almost that, everything well.
One of the things it really does well is it. I think it does a wonderful job of depicting what life is like for a tween, for a 12-year-old early, early high school, certainly middle school age child, dealing with some pretty significant life experiences that he has absolutely no control over.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The anger, the sadness, the frustration. You know, he cries several times in the movie,
right. Mm-hmm.
But all of those times are very well contained over specific issues.
And they're tears of impotence.
Mm-hmm. You know,
that
because he can't do anything.
He can't control any of this.
Right.
He can't control school, can't control the bully, can't control his mother's illness. There's nothing that he has any control mm-hmm. over. And you can see their tears of impotence.
Even as the bully is beating him up, mm-hmm. he doesn't cry.
No.
There's no cry. He cries over these things that he has. He cries for a moment over his dad, pushes him away, wipes mm-hmm. away the tears, and then just walks away.
Goes on, right.
He
cries after he destroys the room and he realizes what he's done.
He's very distressed there.
Remorseful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But he's very stoic and very otherwise very mm-hmm. you know, flat after he beats up the bully and he's right. sitting in the principal's office. There's no tears there.
Mm-mm.
It's just, you're not going to punish me,
right?
And that's about all he mm-hmm. says there,
right?
So, you know, he has been through so much, and we too often we minimize the things that kids go through, and this film did a really nice job of demonstrating or presenting what it's like for kids to go through some of these things.
Right. As I was watching this, and I thought of the things that he was doing, such as destroying the room, mm-hmm. temper tantrums, beating up that kid.
Right.
Like the principal said, we could have expelled you for
right.
this. We see kids who do these things.
Mm-hmm.
At no time did we ever dislike Connor.
Right.
In fact, we were always rooting for him.
Right.
We had empathy.
Mm-hmm.
We understood because we knew the story. We
mm-hmm.
knew his story.
Right.
And so everything that he did that would have been, he could have been suspended or expelled
mm-hmm.
for, we were glad that he wasn't because he didn't deserve to be.
Right.
Because we knew his story. We don't know the story
mm-hmm.
of the children we see, whether we're teachers or
right.
physicians or psychologists or
right.
directors of agencies or school administrators. We don't know the story behind the children that we care for.
Right.
And we dislike what they do, and we end up disliking them. You cannot dislike Connor.
Right.
Nobody can dislike this kid.
Right.
Okay? You don't feel sorry for him. You just understand.
Right.
You have empathy, not sympathy.
Right.
And I wished we could get there with the children we deal with this 10 or 20% of children who are belligerent and angry
right.
and cause so much trouble in schools
right.
and homes. I wished that we could know their story because
right.
I think if we knew their story, their behavior would make more
right.
sense and we would deal with them very differently.
Yeah.
We wouldn't just punish.
Right. Yeah, I think that that's, you know, that's certainly something that we teach and we talk about a lot and we work on a lot here in our practice
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you have to know the person. You have to know the kid. You have to talk to them. You have mm-hmm. to make sure that you create that connection. And we do, too often parents and adults who work with kids
right.
see things black and white, even though we're just
yeah.
talking about how, you know, that's a very childlike thing
mm-hmm.
to do. We see things very black and white. Oh no, he's making bad choices. Oh no, he's doing that just to
mm-hmm.
you know, get a rise out of me because
right.
he knows that he's not supposed to do that or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's really important that we take the time to get to know and look at things from the kids. You know, I say this all the time, but you know, what benefit would it be for him to
right.
behave that way
right.
voluntarily?
Right.
What benefit would it be for kids to make these horrible decisions
mm-hmm.
voluntarily?
Yeah, we have this thing in education called the functional assessment of behavior, functional
mm-hmm.
behavioral assessment. And it's getting reduced to, well, is the child trying to get something or avoid something?
Right.
It's not that simple.
Right.
You know,
there's so many
look
more
at Connor.
Things.
It wasn't access or avoid. Mm-hmm. It's more complicated than that. Yeah. So if you're going to figure out what the function of the behavior is, you need to know the person's story.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And that's what the ACEs study has been telling us, is that there's something else at work here. So make sure you know what it is before you start your interventions.
Yeah. And those of you who are policy developers, here we have a great example of a kid who is experiencing something. He would probably fail his FSA. He would probably fail a state mandated test. Not because he
wouldn't do
the
his
teacher,
homework.
Not because the teacher didn't do a good job.
Right.
Not because he isn't knowledgeable. Not because he's not a smart kid. Not because he doesn't have skills. But because of life.
Right.
There's so many other things going on.
That are more important than how he's doing on a standardized test. I mean, and we have forgotten that. We have lost all of that.
Right.
In this need to generate data, we've lost sight of the fact that there's a story behind each one of these kids, especially the ones who are the most challenging.
Yeah.
There's something else going on here.
Absolutely.
And it really is incumbent upon us. And I think that's what this movie brought to me, is that there's a story behind each one of these kids.
Right.
We need to know what it is.
Right, absolutely. So, all right. That's
doesn't,
it.
Doesn't absolve them of responsibility, but it requires a different approach.
Absolutely.
So,
all right. Well, that is all. Great movie.
Yeah.
Please watch it. Please write to us. Let us know what you think. We haven't yet decided what our movie will be next month.
I hope it's as good as this one.
After the talk a minute ago, we might need to be Star Wars. It won't be, because you don't really appreciate Star Wars the way that you should. So
you're right. I can't finish the word whistle for Star Wars because I just don't know those things about that movie.
I'll help you with that.
I know. You probably know those. So, oh, yeah, there it is. And I think
it's Greedo.
That's not even a word.
It's Greedo. So, all right. So that is it. We will announce what our next movie will be for October, right? Oh, maybe it should be a Halloween movie.
No,
it can't be a.
Well, it could. There are some.
If it was a, we wouldn't do rated R movies. But I mean, we could. But the Rob Zombie Halloween, it's a horror movie, but they depict in that some of the consequences of child abuse in such fantastic ways. But we won't
maybe,
do that one.
Maybe there is a Halloween movie that would be appropriate.
Yeah, we'll
see. I don't know.
We'll look into that and see what we can find. But all right, that is it, though, for today.
Okay.
Thanks so much for listening. Write to us if you have any ideas or thoughts about anything, about what we said at this or about any of the other podcasts. So until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.